presented by DogNation.com. This is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
Later on, I'm going to tell you about two really fun guests we're going to have on today's program, and I'm going to remind you about a big opportunity that you're going to want to be a part of. Before we get to that, though, I think the most interesting story around Georgia football over the last few days has been this continued pursuit of an upgrade in non-conference scheduling, and there's really no other way to say it than that. Georgia has not just been dabbling its toe in the waters of let's play some tougher non-conference games. What Georgia has really done is completely reimagined what a college football schedule could look like. And for me personally, and I've never, you know, shied away from the fact that I'm a fan of the Georgia Bulldogs, as a fan, it fills me with a sense of pride to think that Georgia is leading the way on this. However, there are two points in addition to that that I will admit privately I also think. Sometimes I wonder strategically if this is going to work out as well as maybe some think it should and will, and that doesn't change the fact that I still like the games that Georgia's being played. I just am a little bit suspicious of the College Football Playoff Selection Committee's true desire to reward the toughest and best schedules. The last 5 years of history of the College Football Playoff don't necessarily suggest that. However, what Georgia's doing, I think, is still the right thing to do. But even beyond that, the other thing that kind of jumps out to me is, with Kirby Smart being as aggressive as he has been in pursuing these games, the one that was just added with Oklahoma, the Florida States, the Clemsons, the Texas, Notre Dame, which is coming in here this season, I guess also an example of that as well. When you look at all these games that Georgia's going to play, I just hope that Georgia gets the national credit it should get for when the new era gets here. I hope the history books let it be known that it was Georgia who put us on this path. It was Kirby Smart individually who set us down this course of better non-conference schedules. And one day when you're talking to your grandkids 100 years from now, you can say, back in my day, there were big-time college football programs who played the UT Chattanoogas and the McNeese States and the Troys and, you know, whomever else you want to mention. I hope that's a real foreign concept to the next generation, the folks too young to even know anything right now. I hope that's a foreign concept to them in the future by college football. And if that does indeed happen, it certainly seems that Kirby Smart has done his part to push us towards that direction. And I kind of hope he gets credit for that. Now, ultimately, the credit doesn't mean anything. You can't trade that for anything of real, actual, tangible value. But it just sort of seems right, doesn't it, that Kirby Smart would be recognized for what he's done, not just to upgrade Georgia's schedules, but maybe eventually upgrading all of the major programs' schedules in college football. That Kirby Smart, in a roundabout way, is kind of a trailblazer on this. Well, if you agree with me on that, there is good news today. Some in the national media truly are noticing what Kirby Smart has done. The latest iteration of this, the addition of Oklahoma in Norman in 2023, back in Athens in 2031, and on the ESPN program, Pardon the Interruption, which has been on for a million years, and a show that I still kind of like, although I probably don't watch it nearly as much as I used to. I'll tell you a quick story. I was sitting here in our Dog Nation World Headquarters studios last night. I was doing a little bit of work, and we got some TVs on, like a lot of the sort of sports-themed businesses probably do. And I looked up on one of the monitors, and sure enough, there were Wilbon and Kornheiser, these two faces that have debated a million topics over the years, and they're actually talking about Kirby Smart. Now, if you watch the show, or for really any of these ESPN shows, the Stephen A. Smith stuff, or the Skip Bayless stuff on Fox, you know that college football is not a topic they discuss every day. It's the NBA ad nauseum for whatever reason, but it's not college football probably as much as you might think or you might want it to be. Well, they were talking about Kirby Smart in Georgia yesterday on Pardon the Interruption, and in the middle of the late spring heading towards summer, that's probably kind of a neat thing, and they were crediting Smart in Georgia for the scheduling work that is done. I thought this was kind of cool. Here's Tony Kornheiser on the subject of Georgia playing the tougher games.
I don't know if it's wise. I think it's a very, very good move. They want three powerful non-conference opponents. In 2015, before Smart got there, they had Louisiana, Monroe, Southern, and Georgia Southern. So they had the Southerns completely covered. Here's, I think, the long-range thinking. I think that the college playoff will eventually go to 8, and then you're going to have to include some non-conference winners, right? And so you look at how do you choose them, and maybe you look at how basketball chooses them, that they look at strength of schedule. And so Kirby Smart would be positioning a really great program like Georgia into a two-loss-and-in situation, right? That's got to be his thinking.
I think Kornheiser's right about that. That's also the scenario that I hope is true. I'm in favor of an 8-team playoff, and I'm in favor of that 8-team playoff rewarding what I guess would be at least three non-conference champions in a situation like that, rewarding the teams who are truly the best. And I think one of the best ways to prove you're one of the best teams in college football is to play the best overall schedule. I mean, let's face it. We all know the really disappointing feeling it was after the 2018 season when I think many of us felt like there was an argument to be made that Georgia was one of the four best teams in the country, and yet it wasn't a winning argument because most people around the country didn't want to hear it. They chose to ignore Georgia in favor of teams like Oklahoma and Notre Dame that had better records. That's a tired debate now, but one of the things that Kornheiser seems to be saying there is, in future debates like that, if you're playing the kinds of schedules that Georgia's going to be playing in addition to the SEC schedule, boy, it's going to be a lot harder to leave out UGA, and it's kind of nice to hear a talking head on ESPN say that. Now, his partner in these debates is Michael Wilbon, and Wilbon reflected on, pardon the interruption yesterday, a very similar line of thought. Here is Wilbon on UGA.
The key here is you can sustain two losses, and there will regularly be, particularly from the SEC, because let's face it, their conference schedule is so difficult.
Yeah.
They always get the benefit of the doubt with whoever's in that room. And so now you say, okay, they got two losses, so what? They played Oklahoma. They played
Texas.
UCLA. Played Texas.
Yeah.
So, and home and home, not neutrals. Not we play at the Mercedes-Benz Atlanta Stadium.
No.
You play on campus.
Yeah.
You play in Austin.
I agree.
You play in Norman.
There's another part to this, Mike.
It should work.
First of all, it's kind of funny to hear these two talking over each other. It sounds like me hosting Before the Hedges with Jeff talking over him the entire time. It's kind of funny to hear that. But as I said before, the ultimate national attention that Georgia gets here probably doesn't mean a whole lot, but I still like it because what you're hearing there from both those guys is pretty well reflective of the way that I feel and also of the way I think many of you feel about this, that in the future, I think tougher schedules are going to matter more than ever before, and the fact that Georgia is going to be playing the toughest of those schedules is overall kind of a cool thing. And it seems like from time to time, sometimes the SEC, not UGA individually, but the SEC collectively, kind of gets a little bit poked at from some of these big city guys outside the Southeast. Sometimes they want to be skeptical of the SEC because they get tired of SEC dominance. But you hear there a good bit of acknowledgement on the part of Wilbon, which in and of itself is not a bad thing. Now, let me kind of keep the same theme of the conversation going here for a moment, because Kirby Smart was also talking about these schedules himself. He was on WJOX yesterday, which is a big sports radio station out of Alabama. That region's tradition celebrity pro-am was yesterday. For those of you who like golf, it's the PGA Tour Champions event that takes place in Alabama every year, and the big event on Wednesday is always highly attended by a lot of coaches and college football type personalities. Kirby Smart is typically there. He was there again yesterday. He sat down for a radio interview on WJOX, and the subject of the recently scheduled Oklahoma series was also the topic there. And the question that came up was, and this is a point of curiosity for not just folks outside the bubble of Dog Nation, to a certain extent within the bubble of Dog Nation too, of, well, it's good that you're playing Oklahoma, but how come they're not coming to Athens until 2031? And I thought Kirby Smart had a really good answer to that question. Here's what Kirby Smart said.
Here's the problem. If you don't do that, you won't have one of those games. So for us, 2023, we just got Oklahoma. We couldn't find anybody in the country that didn't have a game in 2023. And you think, well, that's 4 years out. That's like right now. Because the scheduling is all done. You see Alabama's doing the same thing. Clemson's doing the same thing. If you don't get your games further out, you won't have games.
I get that, but 2031 is a long time.
Right, but there's no opening between there and there. We had a weird gap. We had 2023, and then everything was booked. So the only option was 2031. But I agree, it's a long way out. But you can't not do it that way because they go out and get other teams. For the only option we have 2023 would have been to play a team we could have paid and come in. And then I'd be sitting here going, well, why are you playing all these cupcakes? You know what I mean? So for us, we want to go play the best. We think it's going to help with the college football playoff because the strength of schedule is always going to be a major factor, and we want that.
I mean, listen, I think the point that Smart's making there is inarguable. Obviously, we'd love to play all these games this upcoming year if possible, but the fact of the matter is it's not possible because of the convoluted nature of the scheduling. And as Smart says, the kinds of scheduling work other programs are doing is more proof of that, that as it stands right now, Smart and Georgia are literally doing the best that they can. However, there's one more small clip I want to play from Smart, and ultimately I think this is the bottom line of this entire discussion, that it may be good for the playoffs to have – the best overall schedule, and it may help with recruiting and things like that. But ultimately, the idea in mind here is the biggest programs ought to be one playing in the biggest games. And I thought Smart said that perfectly yesterday.
We've said, you know what, let's go out and play them. It helps recruiting, helps national stage. You want to be in the game at 8 o'clock on Saturday night, you know, playing right. Notre Dame. That's what you want.
Once again, that's WJOX there in Alabama. Pretty good conversation with Kirby Smart yesterday. And that final line is the one that sums it all up for me. It's nice that Wilbon and Kornheiser on PTI have noticed the tougher Georgia scheduling. And strategically, it may indeed work out to an advantage when it comes to a college football playoff conversation. But ultimately, the value of these games is the games themselves. I like Kirby Smart's phrasing there. 8 o'clock on a Saturday night, we can all get our eyes closed and have a vision of what that game looks like. We like settling in front of the TV on our couches and watching these biggest college football games each and every week. And for those of us who are Georgia fans, there's a sense of pride in thinking that Georgia's one of the teams that belongs in games like that. And Kirby Smart seems to have just ensured the Dogs will be in those kinds of games for many years to come. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Hello to you, and thanks for being with us. Live on video today, 10 a.m., Dog Nation Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, from the radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref. And we're available as a podcast pretty much wherever you find them, the Apple Podcast Player, the Google Podcast Player, and the world-famous DogNation.com. Now, speaking of DogNation.com, I want you to go to DogNation.com. Find the link there for our Dog Nation Days of Summer. The first big event for that this summer comes up on Thursday, June 13th. When you go click in that link at DogNation.com for Dog Nation Days of Summer, you're going to find a spot to register for your chance to win a VIP stay at Callaway Resort and Gardens with us, the team from Dog Nation, on Thursday, June 13th. So please register for that while you have a chance. Also, go ahead and book your rooms. I know a lot of them have been being booked very fast. My understanding is we still have some spots left for our VIP event that night before the big event at 6 p.m. We have a special VIP opportunity that night an hour early, but you got to be one of the first 20 rooms booked. And those rooms, at least in terms of the VIP opportunity, are not going to last forever. So get in and get involved and be a part of all of that. DogNation.com, the place to go for that. And if you're concerned about winning the trip, I understand you are, please don't miss out on your chance to book a room, because once the VIP stuff is gone, we can't add more to that for space issues, for, you know, the cost of attendance type issues. We can't add more to the VIP list once it's full. If you win the trip and you've already booked a room, we'll simply comp that trip for you and we'll get you all taken care of. But we can't add to the VIP list once the list is completely locked down and full. So get in, get booked, and be a part of that. DogNation.com, the place to go to find out more about Dog Nation Days of Summer. And by the way, we also have a few spaces reserved for a couple golf foursomes on Friday. For those of you who want to extend your stay a little bit, hang out with us on Friday, go to DogNation.com on that as well. There's a place to kind of get in on there and find out if you want to be a part of some golf, myself, Jeff Sintel, maybe some other Dog Nation folks. Check in on that, because we're there to have a good time and we're going to have fun, and part of that includes golf for many of us. So check in on that at DogNation.com. Hope to see you at Callaway Resort and Gardens on June 13th for Dog Nation Days of Summer, and then in August at Brasstown Valley Resort and Spa as well. All right, let's go around the doghouse here today. It's presented by Online Trading Academy, and I want to go back to some news that we heard yesterday. Jeff Sintel wrote about this at DogNation.com. One of the top recruiting targets on Georgia's board, the four-star offensive tackle Tate Ratledge, has made an announcement. He put this out on Twitter. If you're on video, you get a chance to see this. He's down to a final two, he says, of Georgia and Tennessee, and on Monday morning, he's going to make his decision. Now, if you listened to Before the Hedges presented by Kroger yesterday, you heard a little bit of audio from Ratledge that maybe gives us a bit of insight into kind of how this decision is going to play out. First and foremost, he's going to get a lot of attention right now this weekend heading towards Monday, because he's a big target for the Dogs and a big target for the Vols. But that level of attention is not necessarily something that Ratledge is necessarily all that comfortable with. In fact, here's what he said about that in the past.
I'm not a big, like, put myself out there like, oh, I'm going to get all this media attention and stuff like that. So I might just do it like simple thing on Twitter or something like that.
If you had to decide tomorrow, if tomorrow was National Signing Day, do you know?
I do not. I have no clue right now.
Do you know which hats would be on the table, I guess, a little bit? Do you know who would be in it?
If I had to say right now, Tennessee, Georgia, Alabama, Auburn, and Florida.
So that's what he said then. Obviously, now we've whittled that down to just a final two. And when Ratledge spoke to Jeff Sintel not all that long ago, he kind of talked about that level of comfort that he has with both Georgia and Tennessee. And it's easy to understand why they ended up being his final two. Here's what he said about that.
Which one of those schools do you have the fewest questions about by now?
Georgia and Tennessee. I've been there the most, and I've built great relationships with Coach Frank, Coach Pittman. Every time I go down there, it's not like tour of everything. It's getting closer with the coaches and building those relationships. I like Athens. I mean, I feel like I'd be happy there if I wasn't playing football. Like, I could live there. And Coach Pittman, he's probably the coach that I've came closest with over my time being recruited.
So, listen, I think that makes you feel really good if you're a Georgia fan. It's also worth pointing, as Jeff has written at DogNation.com, Tate Ratledge's dad also has that Power T sticker in the back of his truck. So this is a family that's got some fan connection to Tennessee, but obviously a connection with Sam Pittman, and that's one of the reasons why Georgia fans, while a little cautious here, will feel optimistic a little bit heading towards Monday when Tate Ratledge ultimately makes his choice between the Dogs and the Vols. Cannot wait to see how that unfolds. It's Around the Doghouse here on Dog Nation Daily. It's brought to you by Online Trading Academy. You know, investing is one of the most important things for any person in their life, and if you're getting started in that, one of the best decisions is to make the decision to invest in yourself. That means learning how to make money in the markets. I'm talking about across a variety of trading styles and a spectrum of asset classes. That's one of the things that Online Trading Academy gives you a chance to do, both in the classroom and online. You will truly learn how to make money in the markets. That means you want to check out their website right now. That's tradingacademy.com/Atlanta. Once again, tradingacademy.com/Atlanta. It's Online Trading Academy. All right, later on, there is a former UGA player who's written a fascinating book. He's going to tell us more about his story then and there, and I think you're going to really like that. But first, also another former Georgia player and a good friend of us here at Dog Nation who just celebrated a terrific honor. It's the former linebacker, Rennie Curran. It's great to have him on Dog Nation Daily, and great to have you with us as well. And, of course, he is a terrific guest on Dog Nation Daily. Every time we have a chance to talk to him, it's always a real pleasure. And it's Rennie Curran, the great former Georgia linebacker, also a guy who's made a huge impact in the community since his Georgia career has come to an end. Rennie, thank you for being back on our program. We really appreciate that, and we hope you're doing well today.
Definitely, man. Thank you guys so much for having me on. It's always an honor.
Well, let me start with this. How about some great news? I had a chance to read about you not too long ago. I guess inducted into the Gwinnett Sports Hall of Fame. Now, I know you're a humble guy and you don't want to brag on yourself, so I'm going to do a little bragging on you for you if you don't mind. You know, Gwinnett County is one of the most sports-rich counties in really the entire state of Georgia. Great athletes from all sports have come from that county. Of course, you're one of the most prominent in recent years. How much fun was it for you, and how good did it feel to be recently honored in kind of a Hall of Fame? I don't know that there's any Hall of Fame that'll ever have me inducted into it, so you can say something that most of us won't be able to say. How much fun for you was that?
Man, it was too much fun, man. Really just more than anything, just humbling. And like I said, it was an honor, man, to just be mentioned in the same sentence with a lot of the great guys like Jeff Francoeur, Matt Stinchcomb, David Green. I mean, you can go on and on with the amount of guys who really came to this county, and it's really a testament, and I spoke about it in my speech, to the teachers, the coaches, the pastors, everybody in the community who really poured into me, man, because I was a kid who always, along the line, needed some type of help, you know, whether that was a ride to practice or whether that was from the schools being on free and reduced lunch meals. I mean, there's so many obstacles I had to overcome, so to get to that point of being a Hall of Famer, man, it's unreal and it's crazy. And like I said, I'm a product of the community, so I was just, you know, very thankful. And I actually had an event back at my high school this past weekend at Brookwood just to honor all those people who helped me along the way, man. So it was an amazing time and a huge honor. I'm just blessed to get that award.
I think that's a really cool thing to hear because we obviously see you playing on fall Saturdays in Athens and we celebrate you for your individual success, but it sounds like what you're saying is for every great football player, yourself, your teammates, the guys who are at Georgia now, there's really a story behind the story of the people who helped them get there, whether it's just a ride to practice or maybe something more significant than that, that there's really stories behind all these stories, it sounds like.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. I mean, I can go on and on. As I said before, I had guys like Chip Smith, who was a very prominent trainer, him and Ryan Golden, who trained me all throughout high school, middle school and high school. I mean, my parents couldn't afford it at that time, and, you know, he let me train there for free, basically, and just really, really helped me. And I can't not mention my teammate, too, because I definitely wouldn't been able to run around like I did at the linebacker position if I didn't have great defensive linemen and great scout team players who helped me to prepare for every game day in and day out. You know, I had Gino came by to my event that I had this past weekend, and I tell him thank you every single time I see him. You know, having one of the top defensive linemen in front of me to take on those huge offensive linemen, man, was everything. And I definitely wouldn't have Hall of Fame anything if it weren't for guys like him. So, yeah, it's definitely a lot to the story than the finished product.
You know, Rennie, when you have impressive-looking young players coming into Georgia, the natural thing for sports fans, not just UGA fans, but all sports fans, is to make comparisons to other players. And Georgia's got a very good-looking crop of freshman linebackers coming in. N'Kobe Dean turned a lot of heads this spring. Guys, they're a little banged up right now, but could be major contributors come the fall, like Ryan Davis and Tresman Marshall. And a lot of those guys are drawing comparisons to what Roquan Smith did a couple years ago, what you did during your time at Georgia. And I guess how much fun is it for you to kind of also kind of look at that, too, as guys do try to follow in your footsteps and be successful at that linebacker position? And any thoughts that you can share on what you've seen from some of these young Georgia linebackers thus far?
Yeah, I mean, first and foremost, it's definitely an honor, man, to be mentioned and compared in any type of conversation, man. After you're done playing, some guys become a ghost, some guys become that example of the standard. You know, being that damn good dog, and I'm glad to be one of those that an example and not a warning. And so when it comes to just hearing my name mentioned, it's always an honor. But as far as the new guys, man, I'm always interested to see how they'll acclimate to that new college atmosphere, because there's one big hurdle that I feel like a lot of them have to navigate early on, and that's the fact that when you come in, you're not going to be that guy. You have to start over. And so for a lot of these guys who are five stars, who are used to, you know, being the man and being the starter and coming in with 30,000 followers now with social media, it's like the first thing I look for is, can they mentally adjust? And by that, I mean, are they humble enough to be second string and still go hard and still, you know, perform at a high level? Because a lot of guys just can't. And that's why you see a lot of guys in this generation who are transferring and who just can't take it, and they fall off, they lose their confidence and whatnot. And so that's what I'm always interested to see, is how these guys mentally adjust. Because everybody that comes to Georgia has the talent. That's not the question, but it's their mindset. Is do they have the leadership ability? And by that, I mean, can they lead themselves even when they're not in that position of success, even when the newspaper articles aren't being written about them? And just from what I've seen from N'Kobe Dean, I believe his name is, he looks great on film, not going to lie. I took down a couple of notes. He's got very technique sound. He's a student of the game. I listened to a couple of interviews by him. He has a nose for the ball for sure. Good straight line speed, and is a smart player who can diagnose plays very well. Some of the questions I have on him, like I said before, and the other young linebackers, is mindset. Like, can he handle, like I said, working his way up the depth chart? Some guys can't do that. And the next thing I didn't really see on his film was him taking on big offensive linemen. You know, in high school, you don't really have to do that. And so can he adjust to playing in front of those big 6'8", you know, 6'6", to 6'8", SEC offensive linemen, and being able to rip off of them and still make plays? And quickness and having that sudden burst, that's something that I'm going to be looking for him at the next level, because that makes a huge difference when you talk about playing against those big offensive linemen and then the running backs in the SEC. So, but other than that, I mean, very talented-looking player. He's got the size. He has all the things that you can't really coach, man. So excited to see him and the other crop of new linebackers.
I think that's a terrific evaluation. And one of the things you say there that I think is really interesting is you talk about the smarts and the intelligence required to play the linebacker position. Most of us, even if we aren't athletically gifted enough to do it, we have some idea of the speed and strength required to play the position you played at Georgia, and the one that N'Kobe Dean's going to try to play, and some of these other guys as well. But maybe the cerebral part of it is a little more difficult for us to understand. I guess, would you mind talking for a couple minutes about the transition from high school to college in terms of all the things an SEC caliber middle linebacker has to know?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's definitely a lot more complex than people really realize. And then on top of that, like, you still have to go to class and perform with kids who are at the top of their class academically. So all those different components make it very, very challenging when you talk about coming in as a freshman and really diving in, I mean, you're basically the quarterback of the defense, so you have to know, you know, what gap your defensive linemen are supposed to be in, and if they're out of their place, you have to be able to adjust them. And then we talk about for yourself personally, making sure that everything from your alignment, from when the ball snaps to after the ball snaps, is correct and in alignment. Because once, if you're one step off, like, you're out of the play, because the offensive linemen are so quick, like, they climb so fast. And then the running backs are a little bit faster, wide receivers, or, you know, in some cases, this is big. So all those things you have to take into account. But as far as the scheme and whatnot, like, things change on the fly. So you can go in with a call, and then all of a sudden the wide receiver, you know, moves from the right to the right side of the field to the left side of the field. You have to make that call on the fly and change your alignment, you know, change your line of thinking on what your responsibilities are. And so all those things happen very, very quickly. And if you're not a guy who's a student of the game in the film room constantly and understanding tendencies and understanding, like, basically what's going to happen before the ball snaps based off the play call, based off the where you are on the field, you're just going to play so slow. And it doesn't matter how fast your 40-yard time is. Like I said, how many stars you have. It's those little things that make the biggest difference. And those are the things that can keep you as a great player off the field. If the coach doesn't trust that you can make that adjustment, that you can, you know, still play at a high level and you're not in your head and thinking, then you won't see the field. Because their jobs are on the line as well, too.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. Rennie, as we wrap up here, you mentioned before you gave a great speech the night you went into the Gwinnett Hall of Fame. I know motivational speaking and being a part of the community is something you've done a lot since you've left college. For those people who might want to see more of what you're doing in the community these days and more of the impact you're having, is there a way folks can get in touch with you on social media or kind of check out some of the things you've got going on these days?
Yeah, definitely. So the easiest way is through my website, and that's RennieCurran.com, RennieCurran.com. And then if they want to hit me up on Instagram or on Facebook, I always do respond as well, too. I love hearing from the fans, and really am blessed to be a part of this Bulldog tradition, man. I really am thankful that I made that decision, best decision I made in my life, to become a Bulldog. So, yeah, if anybody wants to reach out to me, I'm always speaking at, you know, different schools, associations, and businesses and whatnot. So I'm around. I live in Shamby now. So, yeah.
Rennie, that's awesome to hear. We really appreciate your time on Dog Nation Daily. Great insight from you, and congratulations on a terrific honor, and we'll hopefully get a chance to catch up with you again here very soon as well.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much, man. Go Dog.
Yes, sir.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
I tell you, you want to talk about an incredible perspective. I think Rennie Curran does a great job of sharing that there. Just terrific. And I'm paraphrasing what he says, but he says, listen, one way or another, they're going to tell stories about you when you leave Georgia. It's either going to be the cautionary tale of don't be like this guy, or one of those guys, and he used the phrase the damn good dog, one of those guys that kind of goes in that DGD category. Listen, that is just the facts of life. That when you're at a place like Georgia and you are as big a contributor as Curran was, big-time stats, people will remember your name, and they're going to remember what you did. And they'll either say, hey, be as much like this guy as you can, or try not to be like that guy. It's the cautionary tale. Well, obviously, Rennie Curran, the way that he's lived his life while at Georgia, and then after the fact, as a significant contributor in his community, that's definitely the kind of guy you want to emulate there. So that's a really cool thing. And how about the breakdown? You don't talk about getting something for free today. How about Rennie Curran breaking down N'Kobe Dean's game film? Listen, that was worth the price of admission for Dog Nation Daily here today. I had a great time with that. We've got another special guest coming up in just a moment. Candler Cook has written a terrific book, From Underdog to Bulldog, the story of how he became a walk-on at UGA wearing the uniform he had dreamed of wearing after overcoming some pretty remarkable odds. He'll tell us about that coming up in a moment. Before that, let me invite you to check out DogNation.com today for some special savings for Kroger as we head into Mother's Day. You can click into DogNation.com, find out more about what's going on at your local Atlanta Kroger. Everything from sweet treats to buy one, get one on Russell Stover box chocolates, greeting cards, gift cards. Kroger's got you covered on everything, including flour delivery. This is actually kind of a cool thing because many of you don't live right next door to your mother. Well, Kroger can help you out on that. Just go to Kroger.com for Mother's Day bouquets, roses, and a whole lot more. And you can go to DogNation.com as well to find out more about this. So check that out on the homepage there today. All right, SEC Through Time. And something that I said on 960 The Ref, our radio partner in Athens, has gotten a little bit of attention, so I wanted to spend just a minute talking about that. Let me show you the tweet that 960 sent out. Now, I know this seems like me just being a blowhard like per usual, but apparently my quote was, and it was quoted by our friends at 960, seemingly every year a preseason top 10 team winds up being unranked at the end of the season. I believe, this is me talking, that Florida has a great chance of being that team this year. Now, I know what you're going to think. I know what you're going to say. Ah, B.A., this is just you being a Gator hater. This is just you, you know, kind of fanning the flames on this. And I may end up being wrong on this. However, I think there is a case to be made that the Gators could indeed be as big of a disappointment as I first suggested. First of all, statistically speaking, this happens almost every year. Someone from the preseason top 10, Florida will be a preseason top 10 team almost for sure this year. Someone from the preseason top 10 will finish the year unranked. In fact, in the last 30 years, I think we've only had a small handful of times where you've had all 10 preseason top 10 teams finish in the top 25 at the end of the season. So it's going to happen with somebody. I think there's a very good chance that it's Florida. First of all, they're not beating Georgia. From a talent perspective, Georgia's just got too big of an advantage. Georgia won 42-7 in 2017, won by 19 last year. There's no big change on the Georgia roster or the Florida roster that would suggest that gap's going to be closed too much in 2019. And then apart from that, you want to talk about a lot of very close point spreads for Florida. Games against Missouri and LSU, Auburn coming in. Really even the Miami game in week one is kind of within that touchdown threshold one way or another. Listen, when it comes to Florida, all of those games are not going to break the same way, and it could end up being a little bit of a problem for the Gators in terms of not in any way, shape, or form living up to the expectations that Florida fans have for that season. It's worth paying attention to, I believe. By the way, kind of keeping the Florida theme going for a moment, I had to laugh about this. That Florida just announced its own home-and-home series with Colorado. Now, it has been a million years, seemingly, since Florida has played a non-conference game outside of its own state. They just haven't done a lot of that kind of stuff. Had the game on a neutral deal with Michigan a couple years ago, but being in someone else's stadium, that's become essentially something that never happens for Florida. But they got the series scheduled with Colorado. It's for many years in the future, like all of these things end up being. But there's actually a lot of Florida fans who kind of complained about this. Given the series that Florida State has scheduled and Georgia's scheduled and a lot of these other programs have scheduled, too many Florida fans. Now, you can go check this on Twitter, the official Florida account that tweets this out. The responses from Gators fans were not really all that complimentary about all of this. So a little bit of backlash from Gators fans about scheduling kind of a lower-tier Pac-12 team as opposed to something else they could have scheduled. And then one more point that I wanted to quickly mention here. There's a website out there called WarrenNolan.com. Now, I don't know who Warren Nolan is, but it's a kind of stat deal. And I was looking at this. There's this thing called Pythagorean win total where you take the number of points you scored, the number of points you allowed, and you kind of do some math and you kind of figure out what your real record was compared to what your expected record could have been. And according to the data there at WarrenNolan.com, a couple SEC teams may have underperformed compared to expectations last year. Take a close look at Auburn. Take a close look at Mississippi State. Maybe there's a chance there's a little bit of a bounce back from a record standpoint for both those teams. And it'll probably be a subject that we get into more in the future. But for now, we'll make that your SEC through. Let me introduce you to a special guest. His name is Candler Cook. He's written a terrific book. It's From Underdog to Bulldog. It's kind of an amazing tale of how he ended up in a UGA uniform, kind of an improbable fashion. Candler, welcome to Dog Nation Daily. We appreciate your time.
Yes, thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. So in kind of look at your story and kind of the genesis for this book, I guess one of the things that was kind of amazing to me is, and we'll kind of build, you know, to the punchline here of the fact that you get into a game at Georgia, you get a chance to put that uniform on, and I think we've heard the kind of walk-on stories before, but I would say that for most of those walk-ons, they were probably star high school players at least, and it sounds like from your standpoint, that wasn't necessarily the case for you. Would you mind kind of giving us kind of the story before you got to Georgia? I mean, we would expect even a walk-on at Georgia to have been a very good high school player, but maybe your story was a little bit different. Would you mind telling us about that?
Sure, and you're right. Most of them were star players in high school. I really never was. So I was out of full strength my senior year in high school. Just really was not athletically gifted in terms of football skills at all. And really just knew that my goal was I wanted to play football for Georgia. I grew up such a huge fan going to games with my dad, and I wanted to do everything in my power to make that happen. And so when I got to Georgia, that involved coming up with my own training program, eating as much healthy food as I possibly could, and starting to try out for the team. And, you know, went through two tryouts, one my freshman year, one my sophomore year, and got cut after both of those, but continued to improve and get better until my junior year I was able to make the team.
So I got to ask you about that part of this process. As you're kind of doing the training and you're kind of transforming your body, I'm imagining that's a pretty difficult process. Along the way to this, did you ever just feel like it's not going to be physically possible to transform myself, get big enough, get, I'm assuming, improved athleticism? I'm not going to be able to do enough of this, because I think we'd all sort of feel like we deal with some physical limitations. What did it feel like in those moments when it seemed like you may be bumping up against your own physical limitations?
There definitely were a lot of those, and the main one that comes to mind is right when I was cut the second time. At this time, I had already, you know, gone from 140 pounds all the way up to 215. So, you know, gotten a ton faster, a ton bigger, a ton stronger, and really thought that I was close, and was cut, and then was given that performance review sheet saying that I was too small, too slow, average strength, and that I was a Division III player at best. And so, I mean, that said in no uncertain terms that I was not where I needed to be. And it was really tough. I had to take a step back and reevaluate a lot of the things that I was doing. I changed over to a new workout plan. I added a few more meals to my routine to the point where I was eating 10 full-size meals a day. And then I decided to change positions to defensive end, even though I had never played it before. I just taught myself by kind of watching YouTube videos. But I had to be willing to step back and take some risks and find a new area where I could maybe add some value to the team. So that was definitely a trying process, but sometimes those obstacles or failures can really help you out if you approach them the right way.
How much are you having to eat to gain, I think you said 60-something pounds or whatever. How much are you having to eat to do that?
Yeah, it ended up being 120 pounds that I put on. And I ended up measuring it. It was a little over 15,000 calories a day, just because, you know, I was naturally very slim and eventually bulked up to 265. So basically every hour and a half, as long as I would awake, I'd be eating, drank 2 gallons of whole milk every day, 3 gallons of water. So it was pretty, you know, pretty extraordinary lengths that I had to go to in terms of just nutrition to be able to get my body up to that size.
The book is called From Underdog to Bulldog, and you're hearing some of the story here of going from being a high school player to trying to make the team, being turned down, and then eventually earning that spot on the roster, and finally getting into a game, I believe it was in 2011 against New Mexico State, if I'm correct. And, you know, Candler, I'm not a football player, but I've been on the sideline for these games, and we know that feeling of the crowd in the stands, the noise, and how it kind of reverberates off the grass. And even for a game like New Mexico State, it's just going to feel different than a practice, and especially for you, knowing what you had overcome to get to that point, what was your feeling when you're wearing, you know, the uniform that you had grown up dreaming of, and now you're on this field between the hedges, and really this was the culmination of a dream? What were those feelings like for you?
Well, it was an amazing feeling. I really felt kind of two different things at the same time. One was such a great appreciation for that moment, because there are a lot of guys that maybe were preferred walk-ons and were even recruited by Georgia out of high school that will be on the team for 4 years and never play a snap. So just getting the opportunity to play in this game was huge. I was so excited. It was later in the fourth quarter, so by this point the stands had emptied out a little bit, so my friends and family were able to come right down to the 50-yard line to watch. So I knew the significance of that moment, how much it had mean to me for the rest of my life. But on the other hand, I was just focused on the football side of things. You know, I'd spent all these years practicing, you know, learning the playbook and running all these drills, and I wanted to make sure that, you know, this moment wasn't going to be too big for me and that I'd be able to focus on what I'm doing and just execute the play that was called. So really both of those things were going on.
I think there's a fascination on the part of many fans, too, for especially someone like yourself who grew up as a fan. When you get in on the inside of the program, even before you got into a game, you're still going to practices every day. You're still seeing the private side of Mark Richt and the private side of the other players. What was that experience like? I'm imagining there's a nature of it that probably had to be surreal. But as a person who was kind of behind the closed doors of Georgia football, what was that experience like for you?
It was amazing. I was really impressed with just how personable everyone was. You know, guys that you think might not even have the time of day for everybody would, you know, reach out and try to help you with some plays or a drill. And I'd say it was a little bit of shock and awe at first. There was one moment when I was a freshman in high school. I went with my dad to a game, and before the game, they had a few injured players signing, you know, jerseys or footballs for people. And one of my favorite players at the time, Craig Lumpkin, was a running back, and he autographed a shirt for me. Well, fast forward 4 years later, I was now a freshman trying out for the team, and he was a fifth-year senior. And so to line up, you know, in the weight room or in a drill against somebody that I looked up to before was just a pretty incredible feeling. But I would say the team was very welcoming, very helpful. Like when I was trying out as a linebacker, Rennie Curran was always really helpful with helping to teach me the plays. And then at defensive end, guys like, you know, Garrison Smith and DeMarcus Dobbs were always really helpful and like give pointers. So I'd say it was a great experience.
That's really neat. Is there anything about Georgia football as a player wearing the uniform every day that's different than fans would assume that it would be?
Well, I would just say there's so much work that goes to the back end of it outside of the football field. You know, you practice probably, I'd say, an hour or so longer than you do in high school, but you meet for several hours longer. I mean, so you're in meeting rooms, you know, 2, 3, 4 hours a day sometimes, depending on if it's, you know, summer camp versus in the fall. And there's just so much film study that goes into it at the collegiate level that's just very different from what you'd see at high school.
So you traveled down a path, and the book tells the story from underdog to bulldog, but you traveled down a path of, you know, being a high school guy or even a young kid dreaming of playing Georgia football, and ultimately you get a chance to wear that uniform, you get a chance to be in a game for the Dogs. And now looking back on that experience, what would you say that you've kind of learned about, I guess, life from traveling down this certainly unique path?
Well, I'd say it's taught me a lot of things, and that's really the main takeaway from my book is after every chapter I try to relate what I went through to something that the reader can take away, you know, just an actionable item that they can use off the football field. So I think it taught me, you know, the importance of hard work, resilience, being able to step back and kind of reevaluate your problem solving. There are times where, you know, in business where we may not be able to do something the way we've always done it. So you have to kind of take a step back and reinvent yourself, similar to how I had to take a step back and be willing to try out for a different position. So I'd say there are a lot of lessons like that that have really carried over after football.
Kendler, I think it's a great story. And for people who want to find the book, From Underdog to Bulldog, your tale of becoming a walk-on at UGA and getting a chance to culminate a dream, where can people find the book and get a chance to read it for themselves?
They can either find it on Amazon or on the website for the book. It's just www.fromunderdogtobulldog.com.
Well, Candler, we appreciate you being here on Dog Nation Daily and telling your story, and we hope a lot of our audience will check that out. And with Father's Day coming up not too long from now, or Mother's Day as well this weekend, it's also, I'm imagining, making a pretty nice gift too. So, Candler, thanks for your time. We really appreciate you being on the program.
Yes, thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Great stuff there from Candler Cook, the one-time Georgia player, telling his story of how he got into a UGA uniform. And I guess as a add-on to that conversation, I would say that there is something really special that happens when you push yourself to do something that you don't think that you can do or you're not sure that you can do. And when you keep pushing on that, even beyond the point where it almost seems crazy to keep up with it, because everything feels like a success in the beginning and almost everything feels like a failure in the middle when you're trying something and you're kind of tired of trying and failing. And listen, none of us like rejection, but pushing beyond that point of the middle part of something, the newness has worn off and now it just sort of feels stale and tired and tedious and you feel like an idiot for keeping on with something that almost no one thinks you can do. Special things seem to happen in life when you keep going beyond that. And Candler Cook, I think, does a pretty good job of telling his own version of that. And I hope that we'll all eventually have our own kind of story like that to tell. All right, so really fun on the program today. Really appreciate all of you being a part of it. And I will quickly remind you here one more time to make sure you check out DogNation.com, because I'd love the idea of as many of you as possible being with us as part of our Dog Nation Days of Summer event coming up. Starting off on June 13th at Callaway Resort and Gardens. VIP opportunities still available. You got to get your room booked. You can also register for your chance to win one of those VIP stays. But don't let that stop you from getting registered, because this VIP thing is limited. It's not like a false, phony, hey, we're just doing this to kind of create scarcity. No, there really is only so much room available for our VIP event that night. So we want you to get in and be a part of that. There's a public event at 6 p.m. that everybody can be a part of, but the VIP is kind of a smaller room, special circumstances. So get in and get involved with that, and let us know if you want to play some golf too, because we're going to do that on Friday. Also, 922 days. That's how long it's been since the lousy, stinking Gators have beaten Georgia. It's our Gator Hater Updater. We'll see you tomorrow on Dog Nation Daily.